Look, you know this yourself. The price of filling the car at the forecourt, it's really jumped in a matter of days. The €2 per litre threshold has been breached for the first time in 4 years since Russia invaded Ukraine. Meanwhile, heating oil has surged by almost two-thirds since Israel and the United States launched their attacks on Iran. Every time there's a global shock, a pandemic, a war, an energy crisis, prices in Ireland seem to shoot up very quickly, and it feels like they never really come back down. It's News Talk Daily, I'm Ciara Doherty. And over the past few days alone, we've seen prices at the pumps jump by 10 or 20, 30 cents a litre in a single day. Heating oil soaring even faster, and there are fears that electricity and grocery prices will follow suit. And I think for a lot of people listening today, they'll be feeling that every time there is an event somewhere in the world, prices get pushed higher here at home. A war breaks out thousands of kilometres away and suddenly, within a day, your fuel costs more. Global grain markets tighten and suddenly the weekly shop gets a hell of a lot more expensive. And once those prices rise, do they ever really fall back down again? Well, today we want to look at what's going on behind the scenes, how global shocks ripple through the entire economy, why price increases happen so quickly, and whether the system does enough to protect consumers when prices do spike. Well, joining me today is Dr. Oliver Brown. He's a lecturer in accounting at Cork University Business School. Oliver, you're very welcome to News Talk Daily.
Thanks very much, Ciara. Thanks for having me.
Look, News Talk listeners are famously very, very price savvy, and you'd want to be, I think, living in Ireland. And they've been appalled by the prices that have jumped in recent days, particularly for fuel and heating oil. And they've been texting into the station here in their droves.
That went from 177.9 for diesel to 197.9 for diesel very, very quickly.
It was 197 for the ordinary diesel, and the super diesel then was €2.05. Spoke to some people before I came on there, and it's gone over €2 for the ordinary diesel in some parts of Cork, and even up to 210.
Yeah, well, I can tell you here, a listener in County Limerick, is it in Grana, has got in touch to tell me that they've literally just bought diesel, €2.05. Same again at Carrick and Shore in County Tipperary.
Can you give us a sense of what people are experiencing in Ireland?
It's no secret. Like, the price is driven by a spike in the price of oil. One of the key issues here is that the oil that is being restricted in supply is one of the highest grades of oil you can get, so it's the easiest to refine. So any impact on that is a particularly high quality impact that we're going to see. And then the price of the oil itself is a commodity, so it's influenced by supply and demand. Prior to the invasion of Iran, the market itself was actually moderately oversupplied, so we had about a 20% kind of leeway in there, where supply was outstripping demand. However, as we've seen that now in the past few days with the closure of the Strait of Hormuz, nothing is getting in, nothing is getting out. And while they're saying that we'll incentivize ship's captains to sail through it, if you were a ship's captain, would you be facing into that? You know, in the first few days, it was a subdued price spike, particularly because the rhetoric coming out of the White House was, and the messaging was, that it was going to be a short war, days, perhaps weeks, that whoever goes in, they're going to immediately replace, that there was no, like, it was going to be someone who was suitable to the US. And now we're seeing that Iran coming out and saying that this war is going to, they can last a prolonged intensive war for 6 months. They've brought in an Ayatollah who is closely aligned with the last regime, the second son of the Ayatollah that was there.
As President Trump declared yesterday, we're crushing the enemy in an overwhelming display of technical skill and military force. We will not relent until the enemy is totally and decisively defeated. But we do so. We do so on our timeline and at our choosing. For example, today will be yet again our most intense day of strikes inside Iran.
So the markets are responding, and they're realizing that this is not going to be short. It's also gotten very messy. Iran is attacking all of its neighbors, particularly all of the other Gulf regions that are allied to the States in some form or another, typically through capital flows. So it's become really messy really quickly. And I don't think markets anticipated that from the start. So then what we're seeing is that's being factored in terms of the supply. You know, there was a kind of a message from Micheál Martin coming out saying that our prices shouldn't be affected because we get ours from the North Sea. at the highest level of government, that's a fundamental misunderstanding of how markets work. So if we can't get it from the Middle East, and other countries can't get it from the Middle East, they have to get it from somewhere else. So that then impacts our supply because we have to pay more for it because other people want it more.
I think we still find ourselves far too reliant on other parts of the world when it comes to our energy. And certainly this needs to be a sharp reminder and wake-up call about the urgency of moving towards energy independence.
So just for you, for example, if let's say you had a fill of heating oil, you got it last week for 500 euros for 500 litres. You didn't use any of it. It's still sitting there. Let's say you wanted to sell that today and the price of replacing it is 800 euro. How much are you going to want to replace that? Are you going to take 500 euro for it or are you going to want 800? And that's the predicament that these oil suppliers in the country are facing. They can't provide it to you at cost, knowing that then that will create an opportunity for arbitrage for everyone else. So the same happens then. If I could buy a barrel of oil for $70 a couple of weeks ago and I could sell it for $105 today and everyone's only selling it at $70 because that's what they bought it at, then I can make $35 of free money on every barrel of oil I get if we were only to price it at what I bought it at. So that's what we're really seeing there in oil. And it's not that it doesn't need to be passed on. It definitely needs to be passed on to keep an active market, a structured market. The issue is how fast we're seeing it and how much we're seeing of it.
And that's, I think, what people can't understand, that the increases that we saw were so rapid. They were practically overnight.
There is no real reason we should see it. We rose and nowhere else in Europe rose to the same degree. Now, the issue is we are an island nation. Getting it here is more difficult than other countries. We don't have the same connectors, lines, supply chains across land that we could use. We don't have storage. Typically, like not an enormous amount of storage anyway on a national level, whereas a lot of other European countries have national stores of the likes of LPG and oil, and we don't have that. So we're facing that spike immediately because there's no surplus from which we can draw on at the lower price, or none that can be protected by the government at that level. So that's, I think, the main reason that we see that is that when we replace, we're going to have to replace directly from the market. We have no surplus to draw from in the country.
But much of the fuel that would have been currently sold at Irish filling stations, that's currently been sold at the forecourts, would that not have been imported 2 or maybe 3 weeks earlier before the crisis ever began at a much lower price than what we're currently seeing on the forecourt?
Yeah, ideally it would. You know, from a pure business perspective, if you're looking at it, you're going to say, yes, I bought that at 160, I should be selling it at 173.9, we'll say. The reality is, if you do that, you create a market whereby someone can go with a tank and fill it up, you know, at 173.9 and literally go outside the filling station, wait for the prices to go up and sell it for 203.9 or whatever it's at today. So that's the issue, is that it creates an opportunity for arbitrage that can't stand in an open market. So if we leave that happen, that arbitrage will happen on a grand scale.
But in saying all that, the government here has asked the Competition and Consumer Protection Commission, CCPC, to investigate potential price gouging. Now, first of all, what is price gouging? And is it actually illegal in and of itself in Ireland?
So the CCPC has the tools and resources to find evidence of price gouging should it exist, and the authority to punish it should it need to. Now, in reality, defining gouging itself is actually quite difficult. So let's just take, for example, one definition of price gouging is when sellers of certain necessary goods sharply raise their prices beyond the level needed to cover increased costs. So there are typically three elements then for gouging to be considered. So first, we need a period of emergency. So we have the war, we'll say, in Iran. So second, we have a necessary good or item. In this case, we're going to take fuel. And then the third are what we consider price ceilings. So this is the level of acceptable or conscionable, reasonable price increase, specific limit or percentage that would be caused by the onset of the emergency. Now, the reality is the public's perception of this increase in cost, the price ceiling is 0%. That's the issue. The government's perception is probably around about the price of oil, the increase in that, which is about 70 to 105, it's about 40%. You know, anything up to about a 40% increase is acceptable. And then we have in the states, there's a lot of legislation at the state level around kind of 10 to 20% pass on above that to recoup extra kind of uncertainty around supply and demand. So, you know, you'd be talking 44 to 48% being the allowable increase at the moment. And that's what around about what we've seen. So in terms of a legal definition of gouging from the state's perspective, we haven't actually seen it. Now, in Ireland, we don't actually have dedicated laws against gouging specifically. What the CCPC does is they can intervene if high prices result from anti-competitive behaviour, such as cartel behaviour, abuse of a dominant market position. So I can't see from the outside any evidence that price gouging would be found in this scenario.
Initially, we thought this was going to be a short, sharp war. That's what we were told by Donald Trump. Now we're being told this is going to go longer. This is potentially going to be a prolonged conflict within the Middle East. How high could prices go, do you think, Oliver? How difficult is that to predict?
So, like, an equal scale conflict, there kind of hasn't been. Like, Iraq, September 2001, would have been slightly more severe. At that stage, barrels of oil would have gone just above the $100. I think they capped out at maybe 140. So we're looking at now, past really being no predictor of the future, Barclays are saying 120 to 140 is what they'd look at the moment as worst case scenario. I think we rapidly approached that when they said 6 months the other day, because basically what happens is, how long can ships last before they get rerouted? And, you know, that's our supply chain impact to the market. And that's probably kind of somewhere around 1 month that you can keep people on a ship, you can keep them fed and water paid, don't have to move the ship, supply doesn't back up in the actual refineries in the bay. And now we're at that, and we're definitely going to go beyond it to 6 months, which means now the probability of something happening has become a reality of something happening. So now all of the companies who were predicting that they'd going to have to buy their oil elsewhere now have to start arranging contracts, arranging delivery and refining of them from different regions, which actually can be quite difficult, because if you're buying from the Middle East, you're buying a high quality, high purity of oil, the refining process is cheaper, you're getting a better product. If you have to start supplying that from somewhere else with a lower quality oil, your refining process is more expensive, you have to do more to refine it, and the time involved is more significant. So we've all these realities. Once they go from probability to reality, we start to move up the price point. So the next one now is typically like $105 a barrel. If we're considering the next likelihood of something bad happening, it's going to be another escalation. So another country brought into the war, America putting troops on the ground, anything that causes further escalation is going to cause it to go up to 120 to 140. No one is currently seeing it going beyond 140 a barrel at the moment. But again, any escalation, we'll see it go beyond that.
And we did see it up at $147 a barrel, didn't we, back in 2008, back in the global crash?
Yeah, 147. So there's been a few times where we've seen it approach that 147. If we break the record, that this is the idea now of like the markets, if we break a record, it sets a new record, meaning that the ceiling gets broken, it can go anywhere. So we definitely want to see that as the ceiling that nobody in the markets wants to break.
And look, the front pages talk about the price of oil being affected here, but the knock-on effects are so much wider, aren't they, Oliver?
Yeah, there's a brilliant scene in, I don't know if you've seen it, Landman. It's kind of a viral scene where he talks about the windmills, the wind turbines.
They use clean energy to power the oil wells.
They use alternative energy. There's nothing clean about this.
Please, Mr. Oilman, tell me how the wind is bad for the environment.
You have any idea how much diesel they have to burn to mix that much concrete or make that steel and haul this shit out here and put it together with a 450-foot crane? You want to guess how much oil it takes to lubricate that fucking thing or winterize it? And its 20-year lifespan, it won't offset the carbon footprint of making it. And don't get me started on solar panels and the lithium in your Tesla battery.
And what he's kind of going at is, oil is in everything. It is in absolutely everything that we use. So it goes into industrial lubricants that operate all of our machinery. It goes into tires, roads, plastics, everything that we use, oil is in it. So if the price of a key component of every good goes up, then we'll see it passed on, widespread inflation. So this, every single product gets affected. Now, for us, if we kind of consider that broadly, you know, there's another thing as well out of the Strait of Hormuz. It's a 25% of the world's fertilizer comes out of the Strait of Hormuz. So if that will have an impact on our food prices, causing fertilizer to be more expensive across the rest of the world and maybe lowering yields if people decide to spread less fertilizer than they would have normally. So what we're going to see is goods that get shipped here, goods that have a high input cost of fuel, are going to go up most in price. So things that come from far, avocados and apples come from, like, Pink Ladies and avocados typically come from New Zealand. We actually get a lot of fruit and supply from South Africa and Ireland. They're quite far away. And then the shipping costs of getting that fuel here is going to be expensive. So we're going to see all of these costs continually passed on in everything.
Oh, it's going from bad to worse, actually, Oliver, isn't it? I mean, one of the real difficulties, I think, for a lot of Irish consumers here is that this is obviously coming off the back of a period of very, very high inflation. And I know that inflation has fallen, it has moderated. But the problem is a lot of the increase in prices that we all experience, they have become really baked in, haven't they? So it's a price increase on top of higher prices than we would have known 4 years ago.
Yeah, so we're definitely seeing that, where they kind of do get baked in. They generally find it difficult to come back down. We have seen a few things start to come back down, particularly extremely elevated costs like beef have started to fall again, but we might see these go up again. What we've kind of done then as a behavioral change from our costs going up so much is we have changed our behaviors around particularly things like heating. You know, people in before might have had the heating on 3-4 hours a day. Now they'll only have it on 1 or 2. And now that the product cost of heating has gone up again, you might just have a hot water bottle more so than you'll ever have the heating on. So we're seeing extreme behavioral changes kind of time and time again. And what's happened is, you know, we're started to see a lot more dependence on in supermarkets, for example, our private label goods, or our own brand goods. All of the marketing is around the cost of them. They're where we concentrate our costs, because most people have started to go down, the brands started to go down towards the private label, and we've essentially baked ourselves down to, in order to maintain pre-COVID cost of living, we're no longer able to afford branded goods. We only can buy private label goods. And even at that, we've had to swap out a lot of things in our baskets or get rid of them altogether that we might have got before. So that level of substitution is extreme behavioral changes that we're seeing because of those increasing costs.
Yeah, I heard a really frightening stat today that prior to the Russian invasion of Ukraine, your energy costs for your average household in Ireland were 2,000 a year. They then went up, they peaked at 4,000, and they've come down, but they're 3,200 now. So that price increase has really, as I said, been now embedded. And that's what people's expectations are now of what it's going to cost them to heat their home.
Yeah, and it, well, 3,200 is going to sound pretty low, I'd say, in the next couple of months if this keeps up. So one of the issues here is that the government has said that there's policy in place, supports available to switch to the likes of solar heating and, you know, all of these energy efficient upgrades that you can get. However, if you don't have the money to lay away in the first place as an outlay on this, it's not much benefit to you. And, you know, lots of people in their 70s and 80s sitting in their homes trying to heat them, living on the pension with, you know, fuel allowances, they're not going to put solar panels in their home to do that. They're facing the brunt of this. You know, that fuel poverty is a very real and persistent problem in Ireland, that the government has laid out policies that effectively create a two-tier system for heating. We have those who can afford to essentially get themselves off of the main gas and electricity suppliers, get themselves to self-sufficiency in terms of solar panels and air to water. And then that creates a cost that they don't have to pay in the future, which all of the other people below that line are continuing to pay. So the government bears ultimately the responsibility of the lower half as well as the upper half in terms of what it's providing and supplying.
In my opinion, there's supposed to be 90 days of fuel reserves in this country. So the knee-jerk reaction from government should have been to go to the oil terminals and say, guys, what have we got here? What's it looking like? Can we have 7 days of froze price until we come up with some sort of plan? Can we reduce excise? Can we put a freeze on excise? Can we reduce the VAT? Can we do something that doesn't affect, first of all, the wholesaler, then the retailer, and then the customer?
So what is your sense then on whether or not the government will intervene here and introduce some sort of one-off measure or an emergency cut in excise, for example, to help bring down those costs?
Ultimately, the government benefits from higher levels of heating oil prices and oil prices with the excise duty. You know, are they incentivized to decrease it? Probably not. Will they see it? Like, ultimately, they've allowed a significant amount of increase in cost of business over the years. This is just another cost of doing business that they'll see. They'll do the bare minimum that they see needing to be done. And, you know, it will kind of largely be around signaling what, you know, consumers say, the 2 euro litre of petrol or diesel definitely is something in someone's mind. Now, they can't cap it. They can't interfere in private market supply. So all they can do really, the lever that they have is excise. They already did that before. And, you know, the reality is Europe didn't particularly like that, particularly on the carbon tax side. And, you know, we are heavily hemmed in by what we can do from a European perspective.
In the here and now, I think it's important that member states continue to share thoughts and ideas about what they may wish to do at a domestic level should this situation go on beyond a few more days or weeks. And also, I think it's important that the ECB and the European Commission continue to provide member states with the best possible macroeconomic analysis of the various scenarios. It's a very different economic scenario if this conflict goes on for months and months on end.
So it's likely that it's going to be more targeted measures around if you have an increased fuel cost, then it might have a tax benefit in your bottom line towards your profit rather than carte blanche excise at the pump. They may do it at the reporting stage or at different credits for businesses and individuals separately.
All right, Dr. Oliver Brown from Cork University Business School, thanks so much for joining us here on News Talk Daily. Not an awful lot of good news in all of that, especially if you're already struggling to make ends meet. For better or worse, prices that we pay here in Ireland are linked to things far beyond our control, whether that's war or natural disaster or indeed political agendas. And I suppose the question to the front of many people's mind is, what is the government here going to do about it? I wonder how much longer Simon Harris and Jack Chambers can continue to insist there will be no cost of living payments in this year's budget when the tax revenues from things like petrol and diesel and home heating oil are rolling into Merrion Street. Well, that's Wednesday's News Talk Daily. Remember, you can always listen back to the podcast on the Go Live Player and at newstalk.com. But for now, from me, Ciara Doherty, goodbye.